Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I work as a teacher in an exceptionally average public school. One that suffers from the same issues most districts do. Some families have difficulties paying for lunches, and most teachers are forced to buy the majority of their own supplies, both for the classroom itself and for the less fortunate students. I do my best to provide whatever materials I can to ensure each student has an equal shot at an education, regardless of their income status. Like most teachers, even the more overworked and slightly jaded ones, I love all my students. I want the very best for them. As I stayed late after class one day, grading papers and planning for the next day's class, my mind slowly began to wander. Eventually, my train of thought arrived at the topic of parents. As much as I love my students, their parents were a different story. I started to think back a few years prior, when I encountered the downright strangest parent I have ever met, one I hoped to never meet again. I have dealt with more than my fair share of Karen mothers, as well as overbearing fathers trying to push their sons into sports. Regardless of what their child might want, parents tend to think they know best. After a while, all these encounters began to blend together. You don't really remember specific parents unless they're really strange or have exhibited some sort of harmful behavior towards their children. A few years ago, I was filling in teaching kids around the 8 to 10 year old range. I normally taught high school, but found I fell into the position pretty easily. I tried my best to give off a cool and almost aloof demeanor, but sometimes my resolve broke because my students were just too darn cute. Christmas break was coming up soon, and I caught a few sneaky glances of them all working away, making me a giant card, big enough for them to sign in their adorable childish scrawl. As kids, often not aware of how horrible they are at keeping secrets or being stealthy, they thought they were doing an amazing job hiding the card as a surprise for me. I couldn't help but find myself appreciating how lucky I was to get such a thoughtful and charming bunch. One child stood out among the rest though, little Milo Wash. At the start of the year, he had been very withdrawn. I suspected abuse in his past. As a teacher, you become very attuned to possible signs of abuse or mistreatment. I asked around about him, trying to see if there was any way I could make his school life a little better in an attempt to balance out a potentially less than ideal home life. He had been pulled out of school when he was 7 after his father passed away. Recently, his mother had also passed away from unspecific causes. I was unsure if another family member took him in or if he was in a foster system. His guardian had a different last name. Perhaps an uncle had adopted him. I worried about the poor thing coming back to school so soon after losing both parents. That would be a crushing blow for most adults, let alone an 8-year-old child. I kept an eye on him, and to my great relief, he started to open up. I watched with a sense of deep satisfaction as over the course of a few months, this sullen, anxious child slowly became surrounded by classmates and friends. He was still a bit on the quiet side, but he was always on good terms with his classmates. He was a thoughtful and kind boy in a way that wasn't seeking approval. He discovered a girl in his class that never seemed to bring a decent lunch. She had a sad excuse for a sandwich some days, a piece of round mystery meat between 2 slices of white bread, only an apple, often bruised and looking rather unappetizing. He noticed and discreetly started to share part of his lunch with her. After a while, he was bringing an entire second lunch for her. The school had a parent-teacher meeting once a month. Parents could come in and ask about grades, any upcoming events, or things of that nature. It was done in a group setting, but I was fine meeting them one-on-one after if they had pressing questions. I'd never met Milo's guardian, only spoke to him on the phone. That wasn't a cause for concern, as I hadn't met a lot of the parents. The meetings were optional, and it was quite common for both parents to work to support their family, if, that is, the family had both parents. Others just did not deign to attend something of this sort. That level of involvement in the child's life quite low on their list of priorities. It's with that information in mind that when Milo's guardian called, trying to set up a meeting, I was caught a little off guard. He had mentioned he'd wanted to attend the meetings, but his demanding work kept him from doing so. He wanted to go over any days I had available to discuss Milo's progress in depth, but our schedules just never seemed to line up. We finally decided on a Friday. I had made the offer to stay late until around 6 p.m, long after the other teachers had retired for the day. To be honest, I was a little curious about this man and his role in Milo's home life. The boy seemed happy, but no one knew who exactly was raising him. That Friday, as promised, I stayed in my classroom doing some work, grading papers and getting a start on worksheets for the next week. I welcomed the opportunity to get ahead. If I finished the majority of my workload that night, I would have some spare time for myself on the weekend. I quickly breezed through my tasks, having no distractions, clearly a great boon to my productivity. I entertained the thought of staying behind to catch up on work at the empty school more often. By the time I looked up from my mounting of classwork, I realized I had worked nearly until the meeting time. I knew I was alone in the building. The lights had been turned off in the hallway and the other classrooms. I'd asked the janitor to leave one of the front doors unlocked, assuring them I would lock it when I left the building after I'd gotten done with my meeting. When I heard a clattering noise from down the hallway, I had no initial cause for concern, assuming it was Milo's guardian arriving. As a result of our sparse contact, I was having trouble remembering his name. I had written it down, so I discreetly glanced at the post-it note that bore his name and peeked out of my classroom into the empty hallway. "Mr. Ryland," I called out, my voice wavering slightly as it echoed down the empty hallway. I figured I was just hearing things, psyching myself out with thoughts of being alone in such a large, empty building. I waited for a few more moments and started to turn away and back to my classroom when I heard it again. A clattering sound of something being knocked over, followed by hushed whispering. It was muffled, yet I could tell it had come from one of the other rooms close by. Fear washed over my body in a warm, prickly wave. I mentally brushed it off. Perhaps he didn't know which classroom I was in and accidentally went into the wrong one. I went down the hallway, peeking into different classrooms and being greeted with a normal sight of stacked chairs and empty desks. I made my way to the science lab a few doors down. When I looked inside, my gaze was immediately drawn to an open window. I came up with a perfectly reasonable and rational explanation. Someone had just forgotten to close it, and some small animal got inside looking for warmth. I resolved to go inside and close the window. If I saw some sort of animal, I would simply close the door and call someone to deal with it. When I opened the door and turned on the lights, I was immediately greeted with a large, calloused hand grabbing my wrist. My arm was painfully twisted around and forced behind my back. I choked out a cry of pain as I felt myself being forced down roughly on one of the desks, my arm still held twisted behind me. I raised my head, trying to see what was going on. In a fit of self-consciousness, I rued the fact that I allowed myself to become the prime example of a nerdy teacher. Thin, with thick horn-rimmed glasses. Hell, I even wore argyle sweater vests on occasion. It didn't take much to overpower me. A shadow-clad figure stood up from behind the teacher's desk. I couldn't quite make out his face, cowled beneath his black hood. He hoisted a duffel bag onto the desk and began rifling through the supply cabinets. Judging by how he was looking at them curiously before tossing them into his bag, he didn't appear to actually know what he was looking for. Though I was certainly in pain, I was mostly confused. This was an elementary school science room. What on earth did they think we had? Dead frogs and old magic school bus VHSs were not particularly worth selling. The figure on the other side of the room spoke. We can't have him ratting us out. It's your turn. You do it. He didn't even look up from his perusal of random cleaning chemicals as he granted his companion permission to kill me. The gravity of the situation didn't fully register with me until I felt the weight of the second person press hard into my back, followed by a long knife slamming into the wooden desk mere millimeters from my left cheek. Can I make it messy? The crushing weight holding me down inquired. They made no effort to hide the giddiness in their voice. It made my blood run cold. He was enjoying this. No, dumbass. Choke him out or something. The other figure scoffed in reply. I won't tell. I managed to croak out. My throat was parched, the fear making it nearly impossible to speak. I didn't understand how this was happening. Just a minute or two beforehand, I'd been grading papers, oblivious to the drastic turn my life was about to take. I didn't need to die. I hadn't seen their faces, and even if I had, nothing in this room was worth my life. At that moment, I oddly thought of Milo. I wasn't upset over how waiting to meet his guardian put me in this situation, but rather, I was worried how he would react if he heard his teacher had been killed. I didn't want that child to go through any more hardship, especially not when he may feel responsible for it. He had already lost two parents. He was only just now beginning to open up and become happy. I don't know if he would recover if he blamed himself for my death. I was in such a state of shock and frozen with fear that struggling for my life hadn't even occurred to me until I heard another noise coming from near the door. Do you need some help? It was a moment before I realized that I recognized that voice. It was Milo's guardian. He must have been walking past the door on his way to my classroom, peeking in when he noticed it was ajar. But who in their right mind would see a situation like this and ask such an innocuous question in such a calm voice? Damn, the man across the room cursed when he heard another person come into the room. He jerked away from what he was doing and knocked over an array of glass beakers. The sound of shattering glass finally roused me from my stupor. I whipped my head back, connecting with what felt like the man's nose. I kicked back with all my strength, aiming for his knee, and by some miracle, I managed to trip the one that was holding me down. The knife remained embedded in the desk. If I'd had the presence of mind, I'd have grabbed it. My focus was primarily on my arm, which throbbed violently from being held at such an unnatural angle for so long. I opened my mouth to yell at Mr. Ryland to run, a strangled squeak, the only thing that escaped. He stood in the doorway, a friendly smile plastered on his face as if all of this was perfectly normal. I heard another pop and thought it might be glass breaking. It happened so fast, my mind didn't fully process what had happened. The sound was followed by a jagged hole appearing on Mr. Ryland's cheek. He turned on his heel as if someone had just punched him in the face. His smile never faltered. Before he fell, I heard three more pops, followed by three holes blooming across his chest. I felt a scream brewing within my chest as I was tackled and wrestled to the ground. The one who threatened me with a knife, so eager to paint the walls with my blood, was merely a teenager. He appeared to be on some sort of stimulant drug, his massive pupils rimmed with a sliver of hazel iris, and his gaunt face marred with a multitude of scabs in varying stages of healing. I felt the air being forced from my lungs. I attempted to recover, but the boy sat on my chest, clasping both hands around my neck and proceeding to tighten with a vice-like grip. I thrashed with all my might. I ineffectively clawed at his hands, cursing my bad habit of chewing my nails to nubs. I really thought I was going to die at that moment, and yet I wished it had only been me, that Milo's guardian hadn't shown up that night. Both of my parents were in a retirement home, and they didn't know who I was half of the time. There wasn't a single person to miss me, aside from my current class of kids. I wanted to fight for them. I needed to. But I was too weak. Any fight I had in me had long since been exhausted. As my vision started to fade, my head pounded with every beat of my panicked heart. I was certain these next few seconds would be my last. Much to my relief, my attacker was unceremoniously thrown off of me. I coughed and gasped, my lungs burning for air. While I was slowly recovering, I was still quite disoriented and far too weak to see who had come to my rescue. Wheezing, my neck likely already wearing a necklace of finger-shaped bruises, I finally managed to sit up, cautiously scanning my surroundings to make sense of what was going on. My attacker was slumped on the floor. Dust drifted down like snowflakes from the dent his body made in the drywall. He wasn't moving, decidedly no longer a threat. So I allowed myself to look away and tried to find the second person, the one I knew had a gun. To my immense confusion, my eyes landed upon Mr. Ryland, forcing the man in the hoodie against the desk, their faces inches away in what at first glance might seem like an intimate moment. Aside from the fact I knew I'd seen the man shot several times, I sensed something sinister in the air around them. For a few seconds, I had seen him. Mr. Ryland looked almost like a 1950s father. Black, neatly trimmed hair, and even spoke with that old-fashioned transatlantic accent. Staring at him now, I felt like his face was just wrong. His smile took the corners of his mouth much too far, nearly to his ears. His eyes were far too bright, a glowing white light emanating from within that could not be explained away as merely a reflection of light from the room. His teeth looked a bit too large and a bit too sharp. I could see a wave-like distortion radiating from his mouth, almost too faint to notice. From how the hooded man was sweating, I realized it was heat. Oh, you insolent, moronic soul. We had been tracking you after the trouble you caused, robbing that gas station and killing that poor, innocent clerk. The boss was none too pleased about that, but you were both so low on our list. You had at least a week left of your worthless life before I came to find you. What was your plan? Rob the school? Cook meth? Run from this city? You watch far too much television, boy. Mr. Ryland's voice remained steady up until the last word, twisting into a demonic snarl that made my heart leap into my throat. I watched, a deep sense of foreboding weighing heavily in my stomach, like a stone as Mr. Ryland's face grew increasingly monstrous. The longer he spoke, the less human he looked. His voice dropped several registers, now low and rasping. In a matter of seconds, Mr. Ryland was towering over the man, grasping him with newly clawed hands. I wanted to look away from that terrible face, her face now elongated, forming a snout that made him look wolf-like. Thick drops of saliva were freely dripping from his fanged maw directly onto the other man's face, now frozen in terror. That would soon prove to be the least of his worries. I felt myself start to shake. I couldn't help it. Everything was just too surreal for me to handle. I swayed in my feet, unsure if I would be able to remain conscious. The movement made the monster, formerly known as Mr. Ryland, raise its head. The last thing I recalled before everything faded to black as I lost consciousness was those soulless eyes boring into me from across the room. When I woke up, I was on my classroom floor beside my desk. A coat had been placed under my head as a makeshift pillow. My throat was sore, as expected. I felt a hand very gently tap the side of my face, and I saw not only Milo, but Mr. Ryland looking down at me, the concern visible on both their faces. "Are you alright? I came for a meeting and found you passed out," Mr. Ryland explained as I slowly sat up. I really wanted to believe it had all been a dream, just a horrible dream, but I couldn't. My throat still hurt, and I knew it was bruised. And, most curiously, Mr. Ryland still had bullet holes in his shirt. "Your shirt," I said, barely able to speak. I saw Mr. Ryland's face darken. He still had a smile on his face, but it now meant something else. We both knew it. I knew that he wasn't human, and I shuffled in front of Milo, protecting him. "Did you do something to my teacher?" Milo cried. His guardian cast his eyes downward bashfully. "Do we have to move now? I don't want to change schools again." The boy sounded so crushed. It sounded like his worst fear had come true. "Milo, How about you go outside and play for a bit? I doubt we'll need to move, but I still need to speak with your teacher for a moment. Milo gave him as withering of a glare as an 8-year-old boy could possibly muster. He carefully stepped out from behind me and walked over, giving Mr. Ryland a swift kick to his side. It didn't look like he held back. Don't be mean to him. With that final order, the boy left. I was very impressed by him standing up to whatever creature was raising him. Now, I suppose you're going to have some questions, Mr. Ryland started. He let me collect my thoughts. I stood up and found my water bottle on my desk, taking a few sips before attempting to speak. Is Milo human? Is he safe with you? And what about those men that attacked us? I asked, my voice hoarse. Mr. Ryland brightened up. His smile was so kind and fatherly, I almost forgot what he truly looked like. Milo is safe with me. I would never harm him. As for those two, let's just say they won't be found. I put them away for later, and you won't be questioned about the break-in. I'll take care of it. His kind smile had dropped, and the horrible wide smile returned. Unable to stop himself, his face distorted a bit, and he drooled a little, thinking about whatever he had planned for the two he had taken. Realizing he let his human mask slip, he forced his face back to a normal one, dabbing at the corners of his mouth with his shirt sleeve. He muttered an apology. What are you? I asked, unsure if I even wanted an answer. I cannot tell you. Names have power. Words have power. But you have been so kind to Milo, so I shall grant you some information. I am currently engaged in a contract with a very powerful man of the city. He's in charge of most of the shady dealings in the area. Think of myself as the hitman for the mob. Instead of being paid in money for my tasks, I demand certain other things. That's how I came across my little Milo. His words made my skin crawl, but I let him keep talking. I was worried about the boy, wondering if living with this creature was really the best thing for him. Milo was sold to our organization for drug money by his own mother. She had overdosed shortly after. I am unaware of how his father died, likely an overdose as well. I'm a fickle thing, and don't often know what to ask for as a reward for my tasks. I have no use for money after all. At times, I would like some humans with certain, well, let's just call them talents. And at other times, I'm content with a tasty morsel. Because no one is ever certain of what I want as payment for my work, Milo was put in front of me. I picked him up, fully planning on letting him age like fine wine until he would taste the most tender. But he trailed off, looking around the room as if the educational posters and quirky motivational sayings were suddenly very interesting. I waited, not wanting to derail his train of thought. How strange it was for a creature such as myself to scoop up a child. I've lived for a long time. A very, very long time. I've watched humans build up cities and tear them down again. I've had so many different cities of my own, encountered so many different humans, done everything there is to be done. I've had countless lovers and eaten countless humans. I've drifted through history as a hidden darkness, enjoying myself, content with a cycle of job and reward. That smile came back, his face stretching back, looking like he was unable to contain his glee from past exploits. I backed against my desk, trying to put as much distance possible between myself and this creature. I feared I would be the next human he ate, judging by the drool collecting in the corners of his mouth and his rapidly elongated gleaming sharp teeth. However, just as I considered running, a more human look came back to his face. But when I saw Milo, that changed. I don't understand why. I've seen so many humans, and yet this one made me feel like I needed to be there for him, to not harm him, to protect this tiny, delicate thing. I've never felt like that towards anything before, and I doubt I will again. You're his teacher. I'm sure you must understand how special he is. That boy is so selfless and kind. For the first time in my long life, I felt proud for another. I have all his assignments in the fridge. Did you know that? And all his drawings. It warms my heart when he talks about school and all his friends. I wanted to meet you because Milo speaks so highly of you. Think about that. Me, wanted to meet a human. I rushed through work to get here, and I didn't even savor it because I knew you were waiting. Mr. Ryland was now animated, cheerfully gabbing away. After seeing such a terrible expression on his face, the one holding such pride made him look like a completely different person. He just looked so human. My fear had faded, and I even felt a small blush of embarrassment come, but remembering that drooling smile made it dry up very fast.
It sounds like you really love him,
I sputtered, not knowing what else to say. I suppose I do. His face was so bright and kind, I almost wasn't afraid of him. Almost. Somehow, he got me talking about Milo's grades, and we managed to have a somewhat normal parent-teacher meeting. My hand still trembled slightly, and he was careful not to get too close to me. Milo came back into the room. It occurred to me then that he shouldn't have been here at all. I couldn't get a sitter, so I brought him with me for the meeting, Mr. Ryland explained, clearly reading the confusion in my face. He had Milo in his arms, and they looked like a perfect family. Even after what I'd seen, I knew this man should be the one taking care of the boy. Sure, he may be a man-eating nightmare monster, but he was doing right by the child he adopted. He honestly was doing a better job, and he looked like he loved his little boy more than some parents I came across. After our meeting, Ryland watched over me as I shut off the lights and computers in my room and made sure I got safely to my car. It felt very awkward. I was still scared of what I had seen and what I knew the man to be. Either not noticing my discomfort or being too polite to mention it, he just kept a friendly smile on his face.
Thanks for saving me. I don't think I've said that yet.
Anything for Milo's favorite teacher. The rest of the year with Milo in my class went as normal as it could. I didn't see Mr. Ryland again. We never spoke of that parent-teacher meeting, and another wasn't suggested. True to his word, the break-in was never discovered. The whole thing gave me such vivid night terrors, I had to resort to taking sleeping pills just to knock me out for a few hours so I could function at work. I do miss Milo, though. He was such a good kid. Because I teach high school now, and he's getting older, there's a chance we can meet again in a few years. I would be glad to have him as a student. That said, I would only have another meeting with Mr. Ryland during school hours, and with other people around.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 € pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.